When the doctor asked you, if we deem it necessary to perform the surgery, will you be able to afford the operation? You held up one Talmudic finger, a la Jackie Mason, as you answered, and if I can't afford the operation, will you deem it necessary to perform the surgery? And after the surgery, the Groucho Marx you whispered in my ear, when the neurosurgeon, grim as an accountant, though without the personality, presented the two paths of treatment you could take. Do nothing and live pretty well, little or no premorbidity is how he put it, until the end, or go the standard route of chemo radiation and be very sick but increase the odds of living more than a year from 0 to 1%. Your voice, so perfect I could smell the smoke from the invisible cigar you held between two fingers as you whispered, it's like having to choose your favorite Menendez brother. On the eve of your second surgery, your invention of the James Brown alarm clock that goes off shouting, help me now, help me, help me. The Jimmy Cagney you reserved exclusively for the examination room where the two of us would wait sometimes for hours for the doctor to arrive with the MRI results. You pacing in that room that was hardly bigger than a closet, agitated, cursing, unreachable inside your mounting panic. And when you finally had had enough and opened the door and stood there in the doorway, looking out at the doctors, nurses, patients bustling to and fro, you'd catch a nurse's eye and suddenly Cagney, holding on to imaginary prison bars, would ask, any news from the governor? The freakish taffy of your face doing crazy Guggenheim whenever my kids would call, the lower jaw askew, the mouth wrenched sideways, only the corner of it moving as the exuberant, dumb voice says, hey, you Joe, hey, you Mr. Dunahee, he, he. Or later toward the end, you're Betty Davis, when the nurse would ask you every morning how the paralyzed left arm was doing. Dead, you'd say, the right hand lifting up the left, the furtive breathiness between the D's just right, the nurse who knew what to expect by then still cracking up when you say it twice more, dead, dead, before you let the hand go and it falls like someone else's hand, back to the bed. Comedy, from the Greek komoidia, out of komoidos, komos meaning revel, and oidos, singer. The comic, then, is the singer in the revels. So if your cancer was the gravity that pulled you every moment down into the isolating black hole of your dying, could the impressions, comebacks, quips, the little shuffle off to Buffalo's you'd do for the nurses after each examination, even after the last one, 2 days later, you'd be paralyzed. Could all that comedy have been the grace that kept you here among us, where you could go on being the comedian, the singer in the revels, joking as if your life depended on it? But where's the rage in that? The rage that ran through all the voices, all the manic shtick, the refusal not to be funny, as if the cancer wanted all the jokes to end, as if the cancer weren't a random spin of the genetic wheel, a biochemical mishap run amok, absurd for its impersonality, but a character from central casting, Uriah Heep or Scrooge, or worse in your pantheon of villains, a pucker-butted poobah in a white tuxedo on a busy corner hailing a cab, and your Jerry Lewis's lady or your Arnold Schwarzenegger, this is not a tuma, is the cab that doesn't stop but roars by through a puddle that sprays the immaculate white suit black with muck.